Alliance.
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, March 10th, 2025. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. You can click on a donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading where we left off last week. We're in the Gospel of John. We're going to be picking up in chapter 18, read by Alexander Scorby. John 18, by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 18. When Jesus had spoken these words, he went forth with his disciples over the brook Cedron, where was a garden, into the which he entered, and his disciples. And Judas also, which betrayed him, knew the place, for Jesus ofttimes resorted thither with his disciples. Judas then, having received a band of men and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, cometh thither with lanterns and torches and weapons. Jesus therefore, knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth and said unto them, Whom seek ye? They answered him, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus saith unto them, I am he. And Judas also, which betrayed him, stood with them. As soon then as he had said unto them, I am he, they went backward and fell to the ground. And asked he them again, Whom seek ye? And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus answered, I have told you that I am he. If therefore ye seek me, let these go their way. That the saying might be fulfilled which he spake, Of them which thou gavest me have I lost none. Then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it, and smote the high priest's servant, and cut off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. Then said Jesus unto Peter, Put up thy sword into the sheath. The cup which my Father hath given me, shall I not drink it? Then the band and the captain and the officers of the Jews took Jesus, and bound him, and led him away to Annas first, for he was father-in-law to Caiaphas, which was the high priest that same year. Now Caiaphas was he which gave counsel to the Jews, that it was expedient that one man should die for the people. And Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. That disciple was known unto the high priest, and went in with Jesus into the palace of the high priest. But Peter stood at the door without. Then went out that other disciple which was known unto the high priest, and spake unto her that kept the door, and brought in Peter. Then saith the damsel that kept the door unto Peter, Art not thou also one of this man's disciples? He saith, I am not. And the servants and officers stood there, who had made a fire of coals, for it was cold, and they warmed themselves. And Peter stood with them and warmed himself. The high priest then asked Jesus of his disciples and of his doctrine. Jesus answered him, I spake openly to the world. I ever taught in the synagogue and in the temple, whither the Jews always resort, and in secret have I said nothing. Why askest thou me? Ask them which heard me what I have said unto them. Behold, they know what I said. And when he had thus spoken, one of the officers which stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, saying, Answerest thou the high priest so? Jesus answered him, If I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why smitest thou me? Now Annas had sent him bound unto Caiaphas the high priest, and Simon Peter stood and warmed himself. They said therefore unto him, Art not thou also one of his disciples? He denied it, and said, I am not. One of the servants of the high priest, being his kinsman, whose ear Peter cut off, saith, Did not I see thee in the garden with him? Peter then denied again, and immediately the cock crew. Then led they Jesus from Caiaphas unto the hall of judgment, and it was early. And they themselves went not into the judgment hall, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. Pilate then went out unto them and said, What accusation bring ye against this man? They answered and said unto him, If he were not a malefactor, we would not have delivered him up unto thee. Then said Pilate unto them, Take ye him and judge him according to your law. The Jews therefore said unto him, It is not lawful for us to put any man to death. That the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled, which he spake, signifying what death he should die. Then Pilate entered into the judgment hall again, and called Jesus, and said unto him, Art thou the king of the Jews? Jesus answered him, Sayest thou this thing of thyself? Or did others tell it thee of me? Pilate answered, Am I a Jew? Thine own nation and the chief priests have delivered thee unto me. What hast thou done? Jesus answered, My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight, that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now is my kingdom not from hence. Pilate therefore said unto him, Art thou a king then? Jesus answered, Thou sayest that I am a king. To this end was I born, and for this cause came I into the world, that I should bear witness unto the truth. Every one that is of the truth heareth my voice. Pilate saith unto him, What is truth? And when he had said this, he went out again unto the Jews, and saith unto them, I find in him no fault at all. But ye have a custom, that I should release unto you one at the Passover. Will ye therefore that I release unto you the king of the Jews? Then cried they all again, saying, Not this man, but Barabbas. Now Barabbas was a robber.
Okay, Jan, do we have any questions tonight or any announcements?
We have several questions, John. The first one, if you have a felony case in California and states all felony charges are to be heard in a court of record, if I challenge jurisdiction in state court based that it's not in a court of record, when it's denied, what is the correct procedure to handle this matter? I've provided a writ of error to the court challenging jurisdiction already, but would an injunction be appropriate to handle this situation? Or what approach would you advise if time is of the essence? You want me to finish it?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
For a constitutional challenge, or how can I invoke a court of record and get out of this statutory jurisdiction? How do we move from a state court to a federal court?
All right. Well, yeah, this is a major, major problem because all courts are acting as chancery courts, and chancery courts are statutory courts. Ultimately, it's the law of the city. And that brings us to Babylon, to control the slaves, control the people. That's what it's all about. And, of course, all of our courts have been polluted. They've been, really, the pollution really started back in 1750. And that goes, of course, we were colonies back then. But they were already changing our courts, or endeavoring to do so. They did a really good job at it. They've succeeded in many, many ways, even back then. Even by the time we have the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, even at that point, many, many courts have already turned to chancery courts. And, of course, that's the work of the bar. The bar was established, sent here in 1750. And they've been working all the way up till today. And it's very difficult because these people's mindsets are so impressed on a false premise that, our law... Again, it gets very confusing because they've taught different things at different times. So some lawyers will say that, that we're under Roman law. Others might claim that we do come from under English law originally. But both of them, deny ultimately the common law from how we understand it. Which ultimately is really common law is nothing more than common sense. That's all it is. You build your case on maxims, and maxims, of course, it is a truth that cannot be denied. And so there are thousands and thousands of maxims that have already been recorded, and many, many more to be found. But when you go into these courts, it's very difficult to really get justice. I'm in the middle of an argument right now in a particular court case concerning the same thing, where they changed our papers from an action at law to a complaint. So we filed the paper to change us back, to make the point that what the meaning of a complaint was is found under civil law, where an action at law is found under, you know, common law. And I got to the point in the argument, and ultimately preventing us from filing the paper. And in the argument, I quoted the statute that requires that the clerk is to file, and that there's a severe penalty if they do not file, if they reject the filing, or if they hide the filing, or destroy it, or whatever it is that they might do to it, do something with it to prevent it from being seen, that there's a hefty payment for that. I didn't say what it was. It's actually 2 years in jail. So I'm sure they thought about that and looked it up. They kept going back and forth to someone in a back room talking with them. And then they finally backed off and removed the word, we were a complaint, and let it be back into the fact that we were a court of record coming in for a jury trial under the common law. So that was a kind of a win, but that doesn't mean we're going to win in court, because the judge has his own views on how he's going to deal with this. So the problem with the case that you're talking about, really the best thing you could do is take it to the higher court for denial of due process. I would go up the line. If you're in a state court, sounds like that's what you're in, I would go up the line. I'd go to the appeals court and up into the appellate court, you know, with the highest court in that state. And you'll probably lose all the way up. Did he say what state he's in, by the way, Jan?
No.
No?
Okay. Well, he started out in California.
I haven't looked at the California Constitution, but I know here in New York it's very clear that we have courts of record. It's very clear, the jury trials rule. Many things that actually in a New York Constitution that would be helpful. But the cases or the points that could be made, and this was a case and a point that I made in this story I just told, which just happened today, as a matter of fact, was I referred to Article 3, Section 2, and I advised them to forget what they learned in school, because I know at this point I was talking with a lawyer that came out from the back and was with the clerk. I said, you guys got to forget what you learned in school and go find out the truth. Go open a book, it's called Black's Law Dictionary, or Bouvier's Dictionary, and look up the meaning of these things, of what law is. We have Article 3, Section 2, says the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity. So equity is statutory, it's legislative law, and it's created for the sole purpose to control commercial activities. In the case of the United States, it's interstate commercial activities, and also to control the people within the different government agencies. But law is for the people, and law, the definition in Blacks and in Bouvier's, it's that which it proceeds according to the common law, whether it's law, in law, at law. And that's exactly what the meaning, and I know this guy must have understood what I was talking about, and because, again, they went in and changed the names back from a complaint back to an action at law. And an action at law means exactly the same thing, that which proceeds according to the common law. And in order to get rid of that, you know, you have to not only create these rules that the United States Supreme Court has created back in 1938 through the Rules Enabling Act of 1934, where I believe it was Rule 2, where they merged equity and law together and called it civil law. And now they didn't have the power or the authority to do that. Not only is that repugnant according to Marbury versus Madison, begin with. It's repugnant to that. But it's the Constitution. In order for that rule, in order to overtake a law, they got to ignore Article 3, Section 2. They also have to ignore the Seventh Amendment, which starts off in suits of common law, where the value of the controversy is $20 or more, and so on and so forth. Trial by jury, you know, is required, and they can't second guess it. That's the law of the land. And that's where I'd make my argument on that. It would be a denial of due process. A writ of error was the good way to go. That's the beginning. A reconsideration would be the second, and then an appeal would be the third, and another appeal heading up into the state Supreme Court. And in each case, it's moving ultimately for the denial of due process along the road, all the way up the line. Then I would move it into the federal court. I would consider, depending on the case and, you know, what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance, working with the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, you know, we're not looking to sue for monies or anything. But that might be something at that point one would consider. The important thing is getting the case into the court to be heard by a free and independent jury, which, again, you'll have to free them because they all have been captured. They've all been stacked. We have nothing but stacked juries controlled by judges and prosecutors, bar attorneys. And so you have to free them. One of the other things I do in certain cases, it will add in the handbook in PDF form as an attachment, which frees, in other words, a handbook for the trial jury. And, you know, a lot of these lawyers are brain dead. They only do what they're taught. They don't know how to think. Of course, you do get some good lawyers that do know how to think, but they're far and in between. But that doesn't mean that they still go back to the right path, which is common law. But nevertheless, they're pretty much brain dead, and they may not pick up on that paper. I mean, they'll read it, and they may not even read through it, okay, because as soon as they start reading through it, they're going to think, ah, it's garbage, whatever the case may be. But the bottom line is once you get that through that, then, and they haven't rebutted it, if you can get yourself before a jury, now you have something you can bring up to the jury. I would use a PowerPoint and train and teach them in order to free them so they'd be free and independent and understand what the true law is. Now, that's an opportunity I have not had yet, but it's one I'm looking forward to have one, maybe one day. And that would, that's really the strategy that I think is best. You got a lot of shots at it at this point, because you're going up the state level, then you're moving into federal court, then you're going to go through the appeal in the federal court, and then you have the opportunity to potentially bring this before the Supreme Court. The other good thing about this is we're at a point in time when houses are being cleaned, and at some point in time the judicial house is going to have to be cleansed. And we're suggesting, we're not suggesting, we're actually demanding through a presentment to both Donald Trump and also Bondi, we're not asking, we're demanding that these, all of these, working on the federal level, because that's all they can just make decisions on, that all these federal judges need to be dismissed. The destruction that they have done to the people through their rulings and working together prove conspiracy. And ultimately, in my opinion, they belong in jail. We didn't bring that point up, but we did do a paper. It's available to be read. As a matter of fact, it's right here on the front page. Anybody, we have looked at this, but we haven't really read through them, I don't believe. The presentment here, the indictment, let's hold on. Yeah, we wanted a presentment to the President Trump, and a presentment, which is this one here. And then we did a presentment to President Trump and AG Bondi. But all of these papers are really moving towards that point to get to that next line. And we're making moves shortly to also do something with the denial of habeas corpuses. So that's the you know, the strategy that we're using. And I think it might be a good strategy for others to use, not necessarily the presentment, but, you know, what I just explained as far as moving through the courts. A lot of shots to get extra bites at the apple, so to speak. And again, by the time you get up on a higher level, we may have courts of justice back, and you're going to get justice then. Anyway, I guess that's about it. Go ahead, Jen. What's the next question?
Okay. Could you outline or give an overview of the basic strategy or tactic to open a common law court of record? Specifically, if you have a pending criminal matter in a statutory jurisdiction, which is not a court of record, in order to get into a federal district court and create your common law court of record, would you file a cross claim as suggested by Bill Thornton in order to drag your pending case into your federal common law jurisdiction, or is there a better or more direct or simpler approach?
Well, again, first, we've got to be very careful to realize that any argument in a state court cannot be just brought right up into the federal court. They'll shoot it right back down because they can't make any decisions on that level. But you have to have a cause, and a cause is a particular violation of the Constitution, and that gives them the authority to hear it. And so the cause is always, it's been pretty much always, is denial of due process by moving us into courts unknown, jurisdictions unknown, shall I say. But opening a court of record is really quite simple. Up on the top of the paper, we put on the fact that this is a court of record, and we put a footnote defining what a court of record is. And then we'll put trial by jury demanded also. We call it an action at law. All of these are common law titles. So it's an action at law. We define that according to Black's abbreviators. In the beginning, it's pretty much, the plaintiff, name of the plaintiff here and after the plaintiff sues the name of the individual here and after the individual, here and after the defendant in this court of record for a certain whatever we're suing for, and then proceed to continue to build the case. Also up on the top, right side, where you put this court of record, it should be called an action at law and define the action at law. All of these are really, there's like five different ways we're telling them this is a court procedure, which is to proceed according to the common law. You can also, in the paperwork, make reference to the Seventh Amendment and also Article, as we just read a little while ago, Article 3, Section 2, which talks about law and equity, and of course in footnotes I would put the necessary meanings of those things. And that's the case. I did just recently write a pretty good case. I think I'll post that case up in our area. Let's see, underneath Education Starts Here, and we'll come down to law and court forms and process. And I'll also probably put it into the course itself as an addition, an addendum, so to speak, in a course on law. It's an argument I have with the courts and with because every time I go into the court, your first argument is with the judge. It's a constant. It never fails. You have to fight the judge to get into the court. And they do everything to work all these games out. They tried to change this into an Article 78, and it takes that's purely statutory, controlled by particular statutes that are applied by onto people that are going through administrative processes, and then they attach this Article 78 into it, which brings you again back into the statutory process. Or again, they may even try to change your title of the court case coming in as a complaint. And again, go into Black's Law. A complaint is that which proceeds according to the statutes. So again, there's just a lot of key things and key words that you can use. So what we did is they threw us out on this case I'm talking about. They threw us out on failure to serve properly. Okay, which we know we've served perfectly. So they confused the court with so many different issues, calling us an Article 78 case and going through all of these different things. So what we decided to do was change strategy, let the court case fall apart, refile, put the money out again and refile the case, but cover all the points right in the paper. And so we covered a lot of points in order to prevent them from moving into a certain position or a certain way to try to, deny our jurisdiction or try to secretly move us into another jurisdiction. So I will post that up. I'll try to do that this week if I can find the time. And I'll make note of it next Monday if we do put it up there. And this case might be very helpful in writing a case that tries to maintain the jurisdiction that you're trying to keep, which, of course, is the jurisdiction of law. L-A-W. The word law means exactly that, period, that which proceeds according to the common law. Anything else that's law, with a little L instead of a big L I use, that would be statutes, regulations, and codes, and that's equity. That's law and equity. But even law and equity is to proceed according to the course of the common law from the standpoint it has to pass the muster of common law. And that's why the juries have the power of nullification. And so if it's a criminal case, there could be applied certain statutes on an individual working for an agency or commercial activities. Those statutes are part of that case because they agreed to work under those conditions. An agreement unless first. Nisi Prius would be the opposite of that, unless first. So, once you lay that out, then, of course, those could be applied against those people. But the power of nullification is in the people. They may not like the law. The law may be repugnant. Now, the rules are the same thing. The rules of common law are to apply both in equity and law, and that's American jurisprudence. So, again, logic is supposed to prevail. That's the key to common law, logic, common sense. Things that cannot be denied. All men are created equal. Can't deny that. We may be born with different qualities and different abilities, but we're still all equal. Innocent until proven guilty. These are all common law maxims. For every injury must be a redress, or there must be a remedy. Okay, that's common law maxim. There's still quite a bit of common law maxims that are held up in a court. Unfortunately, all too often, because of ignorance, they're not brought up. One of the big ones that's mostly violated is, in order for there to be a crime, there has to be an injured party. And on the other, there's another side to that coin, which, again, in order for you to be guilty of a crime, you have to prove intent. And I hear cases all the time. When you think and look at the case, there's no intent there. Let's say you have an accident, an automobile accident, and someone dies, and they get you for manslaughter, something like that. Well, then, are you saying that I saw someone coming across the street and I steered my car into that person to kill them or something? Is that what you're saying? Because can you prove that? The point is, it's an accident. Now, it could be that, there's negligence involved, but negligence isn't necessarily a crime, but you can be held liable in a civil case for negligence. But anyway, our whole court system is turned upside down on its head. That's a strategy I would use. Next question.
Okay, John, that was the last question.
Oh, okay, good. Okay, I know we have the queue open. Let me see if anybody's in the queue. One person in the queue. Anybody wants to get into the queue, if you're on a phone, *6 and a 1. If you're on an app or browser, should be a button to get into the queue. But before we start taking questions, I want to make a note. Published another book for people who might be interested. The last book, book I just recently published was What Must I Do to Be Saved? Of course, it's a Christian-based book, and this is done in a handbook type thing. It's a relatively small book, but it's only a few dollars, but it's done in a handbook way, and I think it was 81 pages altogether. So for anybody interested, okay, let's move over to questions. Let me move back. And all the books, anybody interested, found under the welcome tag, come down to Books by John Naresh. And there's links to get more information on these books, and then there's a link where it'll lead you over to Amazon for purchase. Okay, we're going to take our first person in the queue. Glenn, what state you're from? You got the mic, Glenn.
Hey, Glenn, I'm from Pennsylvania.
Glenn from Pennsylvania. You're right in.
Yeah, well, I've got some traffic issues. I went to district court and obviously was found guilty, which I figured, but I did get my evidence into the record, and I am now appealing to the Superior Court. I just started your course, And I got, let me see here, the list of documents to get entered or to file. I have file a notice of special appearance, file a notice of motion, file a verified jurisdictional challenge, and file and demand, which is a notice or not to, okay. I was a little confused on that last one. I must have.
Yeah, that you're confusing with something else, because that wouldn't be part of the list.
Well, it says a demand, which is a notice to not remove my documents.
Oh, that's a different thing. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
I thought a notice of demand is a different thing. Yeah. Look, at one of the key things, and now it was a traffic violation, right?
Correct. And I entered into evidence 4 pages of Supreme Court case law on the right to travel, because the license was suspended. I haven't rescinded it from the state yet. The automobile registration was expired. I had no plans on re-registering it. And I was pulled over because of the expired automobile registration. One of the other documents I entered was Pennsylvania Supreme Court case from, I believe it was 2020. It is Pennsylvania versus Copenhaver, where the Supreme Court addressed the question as to whether or not expired registration is a breach of the peace justifying a traffic stop, and they ruled that it is not, making the traffic stop illegal. So I motioned the court to suppress all evidence obtained, and that was denied.
Okay. All right. Well, look, and you don't have a driver's license?
Yeah.
You expired, or what happened?
I'm sorry?
You had one and it expired, or what?
No, I had one. I got pulled over January 2nd of 24. I responded to that in out of state in Maryland. I responded to the ticket twice, and Pennsylvania sent me a letter saying that since I did not respond, they were suspending my license. But, you know, I responded twice. I called PennDOT, the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation, and the lady informed me that I either had to have a hearing in Maryland or pay the fine. And just simply responding, which is... responding and paying the fine are two different things, you know. So I told her, I wasn't found guilty of anything.
You could have paid the fine and write under protest in it, and then go back into the courts. At least this way, you wouldn't be driving without a license. And of course, you know, I have a license. I'm not happy about having to have a license. But nevertheless, it keeps you out of jail. Unfortunately, people go to jail for these things. Did they put you in jail?
No, they didn't. No.
Are they trying to make a crime?
No, I mean it's not a jailable offense.
Well, here in New York, it is.
Well, yeah, and I don't understand how that is, really.
Unbelievable.
Yeah,
unbelievable. But look at the whole thing is a fraud. You know, in order to respond to these people properly is to try to kind of cut them off at the pass at certain points, and that's why you come in with a special appearance, which means, because once you appear, you're kind of agreeing to what's going on, especially if you make a plea, because they'll work overtime to try to make you make a plea. At some point, the judge says, I'll just put the plea in for you, and then you ask him, are you going to represent me? You know, got to be careful, because that could get you in trouble, that question in a court. It depends on the judge, and, you know, I don't know that you want to really say that. But that's really, you know, what it is. I mean, if you're going to put a plea in for you, he's obviously representing you, you know?
Yeah.
And therefore, he can't make a judgment on you. You got to leave the bench. You're representing me. And that would be a position that you might want to make. That's number one. Did you agree to the, did you make a plea or no?
Well, in Pennsylvania, if you don't, then they come and arrest you.
Okay, that's why you come in with a special appearance to test the authority of the court. And
yeah, you can't even get a hearing without entering a plea. that you wanted, the magistrate wanted to hear.
Yeah, that I'd have to think that out and learn a little more about how that system works out in Pennsylvania. And obviously, I'm in New York, so it's a different thing. But so I don't know. But again, my strategy is coming in by special appearance, and that's an appearance ticket, okay? But you're appearing special appearance. In other words, you're not agreeing. And the very first thing would be challenge of jurisdiction. Once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be heard. That's the law. All together at the same time, that's the papers that I would be bringing in. So it's a jurisdictional challenge. What you'll find more often than not, you know, you'll have your paper, and of course you have to have your paper, which is laying out the fact that they don't have jurisdiction, which, you know, the paper I've written, I think, is clear. I mean, it's just, it's a winning paper, just that they don't want it to win, you know. But in any event, you know, this that has to be rebutted. And so you'll find a judge that'll turn and say, well, okay, I decided I have jurisdiction, and you object to that. You can't decide that without hearing the case. The law requires once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be heard. And you didn't hear the case. I put my paper in. The other side was brain dead. I wouldn't use the word brain dead, but so to speak, they're brain dead. They didn't respond, so they didn't rebut my affidavit. And once an unrebutted affidavit rules the court, your decision, therefore, Your Honor, should be for me, because that's the only thing before the court. I laid it out. Now, of course, you know, they're going to get a lot of frustration by these arguments in court, but that's the position that I would pursue. And I did pursue that position, and I did move it into state court, and I did sue both the judge and the prosecutor, and I'm in the middle of still arguing that case, you know. They just don't want to give it up, and the state court shakes hand with them, you know, they protect them, you know, but again, my argument's still in the court, I'll move it up the ladder. And I was only for a speeding ticket, but of course, then what they did, their response to me at some point, instead of responding to my papers, they just outright responded directly with a fine and a guilty. You know, found me guilty, and I just added that into the case and doubled my amount of monies that I was asking for, and then again, the next part of that case, what happened was that. The judge threw it out for improper service. Now, service was proper, but they didn't even challenge service, you know? They didn't even challenge it. So I said, okay, fine. So I reset the whole case, and I filed the case, you know, the paper exactly, the wording, what they said, and they defaulted a second time. Their answer, of course, at that point was, you know, giving me a ticket, you know, giving me a fine and a decision. Then they defaulted again, and I just recently filed the papers of default again. And what they got me on the first time was they got this new rule out there. It just came into effect, I think, in 2024. And I was perplexed because I had a couple cases thrown out, and I just didn't understand what it was that they're throwing it out on. And it was just a note that you had to put on the envelope itself. I forget exact wording, but basically making the statement that this is a legal paper, and on the outside of the envelope. But when I think about this, this case goes back a bit. Matter of fact, before that law, that rule was made. It's a rule; it's not a law. So, but anyway, they just keep playing all kinds of games. It's an uphill battle.
And you lost because that note wasn't on the envelope.
Just because it wasn't on the envelope, they kicked me out. So I refiled. Okay, refiled. And they defaulted again. And I just, about a week ago, passed in my papers on that for the default and looking for the papers or the judgment to go see the sheriff and collect a whole bunch of money. But we'll see what happens, you know. Again, they don't want no one to win. They just don't want a court of law. They just want their own court. Continues to give them profit and control and power and authority. So, all right, what else you got?
Well, that was my other question was, now I have to submit a brief for the Superior Court. Should I submit a brief and attach the jurisdictional challenge and all those documents with it?
Okay, now you're going into the Superior Court. What court were you in? You were originally in a town court, a village court, or a county court?
County court, district court.
A county court, okay. I'm very surprised that Pennsylvania runs tickets through a county court. Very, very surprised. You got to look into your constitution to see what they say a county court is.
It went to the magistrate first.
With the magistrate, it's in a court. What court does he sit in? Town court, village court, city
court?
Town court. Okay, right there, that's a court. That's administrative court. Doesn't have the power to fine or incarcerate. It's not called a court of record, so therefore it doesn't have the power to fine or incarcerate. Can't put you in prison, nothing. And they do all day long. People go to jail all day long, and they don't argue it all day long because they're ignorant of the law. And so are the lawyers. And a lawyer that might find out the truth still won't argue on behalf of you because he's told not to, you know. The judge will leave him out and take him into his back room and really get on his case and threaten him with losing his license. Go back there and do the right thing now, Mr. Lawyer, and protect the state. And that court definitely does not have jurisdiction. Okay, it doesn't have personam jurisdiction. It has subject matter jurisdiction because, you know, any case that comes in there with someone that's operating under commercial activities and violates a traffic violation, they're liable. Okay.
I wasn't operating under commercial capacity.
That's the point you're making, though. They do have the subject matter jurisdiction, but they don't have the personam jurisdiction. They don't have jurisdiction over your person. Have you moved it out of the court yet?
Well, I didn't even go to the magistrate court because I know that's not a court of record.
Well, who applied the authority against you?
The magistrate found me guilty, and I appealed to
the... He was sitting in a power place. He was sitting in the town court then, right?
I'm sorry?
He to find you guilty, he's got to do this from a court. What court was he in? Is that town court?
Yeah, just local town court.
Okay, back to the same thing I was saying. What I would do is I'd write a new paper and start from the beginning and tell them I would... Again, you have to be creative on how you're going to put this paper together, put the wording together, and you're going to want to go over it, massage it, massage it, massage it, trying to really work it out because you're coming in after the fact, but you're straightening out the fact that you just discovered the fraud that's going on here. Whether you use the word fraud, I'm going to use words that you probably shouldn't use, but you have to put other words in there. You know, because you want to be careful how you approach this. You don't want to insult. You don't want to go in there angry. You don't want to go in there, when you're going up against the court. But the thing is go back to say, look, you know, I just realized that I've been brought into this court unlawfully, and I didn't understand things. And again, we were looking at fraud. I wouldn't use the word fraud, but you find some other word that pretty much says almost the same thing. And you're going to come back. You never plead, right? You never made a plea.
I can't remember if I had to write something for that or not. Like I said, if you don't, they won't accept the paper, and they'll issue a warrant for you.
Okay. Well, the thing is you want to come in and re-come in and from a different perspective. You want to do the papers. Did you do the papers correctly? Did you do a special appearance? Did you do a challenge of jurisdiction?
No.
Okay.
No,
well, those are two things you have to do. Well, what papers did you file?
Well, like I said, I took the evidence in with me, the Supreme Court case law, a bunch of codes.
Yeah, but again, that all has to be couched inside of a challenge of jurisdiction. Okay. Now, let me think about this a minute. Coming in, challenging the jurisdiction. You see, before you even make that case, that part of the case, that'd be another time maybe that you'd consider working with that paper, you know, those kind of positions. Really, the thing is challenging the personam jurisdiction, that they don't have it, and that the jurisdiction you're in must be put onto the paper. All papers have to have the jurisdiction of that court, and that's one of the things, that's the law, and it's not there. No courts do that. So that's something that needs to be made the point. I need to know the jurisdiction. This court is operating apparently under traffic law, because they'll give you a code and you can go look at the code and you can find this under traffic law and so on and so forth. And that makes it an administrative court, and for those things up for people operating under commercial activities. I did write a paper on this. It's in the course, and it's also up on our website under Education Starts Here. Come down to Law, and then come over to Court Forms and Process. For those people who aren't taking the course, they can get at least that kind of information on that, different papers that could be written. But anyway, that's the strategy that I've put together, and it works. You got to file on demand. This is for traffic court, an appearance ticket, a notice of motion, and a verified jurisdictional challenge, affidavit of default. But that all comes later on, those other things. But
yeah,
the first four points are the papers that you have to file.
And then
from there, as soon as they violate that, you offer the correction with a writ of error, and you make the point that once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided. And you push that process all the way through until you can't push it no more because they're just not going to hear it anymore. Then you move it into the higher court for cause, for denial of due process. That's the key. And that's what I would bring into the state court as well as into the federal court. And the federal court will listen to nothing, but you don't want the state court to listen to your case in any shape or form because that's not the point. The point is that court can't give me due process. I'm arguing that they don't have jurisdiction over me because that's a denial of due process. At some point, you can even make the case that a statute in itself is a denial of due process because it automatically fixes a guilty plea on you, a guilty decision on you, number one, and it also has this fixed punishment given also. All of this is repugnant to the law of the land.
Okay. So I still would do that at the level it's at, at the Superior Court appeal, right?
So you went to the first you were in the traffic court, which is a town court. Then you're into another court, which is a state court.
Then county court.
No, you're in the county court. Okay.
Yeah.
So you moved it from there into a county court.
Yeah.
Is the county court a court of record?
Yeah.
So
I believe so.
Well, you have to know. Never be stuck with something you don't know in court. You never ask a question if you don't know the answer beforehand. And never act on assumption. You have to be absolute. So go check your constitution and make sure. It should list up courts of records, okay?
Okay.
And here in New York, for instance, a court of record, all state courts are courts of record, all county courts are courts of record. It's surprising they call family courts of record. That blew my mind. And then they also, what was the other one that they called a court of record? The state court, the county court. Oh, the city, the courts in New York City. You know, there are five boroughs in New York City, and those courts are called courts of record, which kind of makes a lot of sense, maybe. I don't know. I'm not in New York City, and I never made a battle in a court case in New York City, so I don't know.
Yeah.
But go find out if it's a court of record, because you may have moved it from one Nisi Prius court to another.
Okay.
And that doesn't get you anywhere.
It seems like nobody gets anywhere. Why don't you request
in the originating court the opportunity to come to reclaim or re-argue your position. But you said you already did it correctly. You did an appearance ticket and a notice of motion and a verified jurisdictional challenge. Did you do those three things?
No, I just started your course, so I didn't know about those.
Those are the three things. Formally ask the court, can you come in and reestablish your position to make an argument in that court and see if they'll let you do it. Then you could start right off the point from there. Then you got to move it into a court of record. I would move it into, from that point, I'd move it into the state court only to really buy more time because you're going to get the same thing, especially. You're in Pennsylvania, you're going to get the same thing. And you're just buying time before you actually get it into the federal court. hoping that by the time you get into the federal courthouse, has been cleaned.
Yeah. Yeah. You really think it's going to happen sooner than later?
I don't know. There's a lot of work to be done.
Yeah.
You know, Trump can get rid of, has gotten rid of 150 attorneys, you know, judges, I'm sorry, 150 judges. And they're all called administrative law judges. Think about what that means. Administrative law judges, that's statutory.
Yeah.
And so he also is looking, or has already, I don't know if he has gotten rid of prosecutors yet. That's part of his plan, whether that came to be yet, because he's looking to clean house with that. And we're trying to impress upon him the need, which he may already know, he needs to get rid of every single federal judge up there. They got to go, because they all violated the law. They all act in one accord, and that's conspiracy, breaking the law, doing the very same thing with the very same process. They all deny habeas corpuses. They just deny so much. They got to go. You can't not let them go. I don't want to do a double negative here.
He's
got to let them go. Okay, let's leave it at that. I don't know that they understand. I'm perplexed sometimes, because one of the problems that I see is they don't even understand we're a republic. Why do they keep calling us a democracy?
That's
an insult. You know, it's a Republican form of government there to guarantee, not a democracy. You know, if I was in power and fighting these people and they accused me of trying to destroy the democracy, I'd agree with them. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to destroy your democracy, because that's not who we are. You people came and turned it into a democracy, and that's repugnant to everything that we know. It's repugnant to the Constitution. It's repugnant to the Bill of Rights. It's repugnant to the Declaration of Independence, the foundation of our law. It's repugnant to every good court decision from the United States Supreme Court. It's repugnant to ignoring the people. We, the people, ordained and established this. Who gave you the power to change it? You're not the people, you know? So, but anyway.
Yeah, and it's a shame. But as you know, it started in the schools. They don't teach you anymore.
Well, yeah, they don't teach anything there. You know, I just saw on TV somewhere they were showing a map to some woman, and she was, she had gone through high school, she said. She went through college, and she don't know the answer. She couldn't even find the United States on a map. Couldn't even find the United States on a map. Can you believe that? That's what we're putting through our schools. College-educated people who can't find the United States on a map.
Well, that's how they want us.
Yep. It's really dumb. Keep the slaves ignorant. That's the plan.
Yeah. So.
Okay. We're going to move to our next. You got any final point you want to make or something?
No, I think that's it. I'm just trying to move through your course. A lot of information. So it's really interesting.
Okay.
We'll
take our next call. Thanks, Glenn.
Thanks, Sean.
Okay, we're going to another Pennsylvanian, Tony from Pennsylvania. Go right ahead.
This is Tony from Montgomery County, and I was wondering, does it matter which Black's Law Dictionary we have? Because, and then what would be the additions or what they took out of the dictionary to make it a newer edition?
Some things have been changed as time goes on. It takes a long time to change a meaning in Black's Law or any law dictionary, but they've been progressively, after all, they're progressives. They've been progressively moving towards changes of things and taking things out as time has gone on. I use the fourth edition, and I also use the second edition. The second edition and fourth edition is pretty good. I haven't really found too much of a difference there at all. But the fourth edition is generally the one I use the most. Once you get up into the fifth and sixth and beyond, you know, yeah, there are problems in there, things that they've changed and altered. So, yeah, you have to be careful. Well, you can download both of these dictionaries off of our website. It may be on this page right here, Education Starts Here, come down to Law, then come over to Court Forms and Process. And I do know we have it in our course, and I'm pretty sure it's on our website somewhere, and it's probably on this page. I'm just looking through to see. Downloads, let's see. Bouvier's Law, Black 2nd Edition, and Black's Law 4th Edition.
Okay, great.
So download those two right here. And Bouvier's Law is good, too. It's not as, there's a lot more in Black's Law. They've been around a lot longer, and they've been really putting this stuff together. Bouvier's Law is, sure, but it's a lot of good stuff in Bouvier's. I use them both.
Is Bouvier like made in America? I hate to say it like that, but, or is it?
It comes from 1856. It's not necessarily that it's made in America, but it's less tainted.
Okay, good. And that was all I wanted. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else?
Nothing from me.
Okay,
I'm keeping it simple.
All righty. By the way, anybody wants to get into the queue, if you're on a phone, *6 and a 1. If you're on an app or a browser, should be a button there to push to get into the queue. We're going to go to Jeff from Pennsylvania. We're going to get two people in the queue. Anybody wants to get in? Jeff, you got the mic. Another Pennsylvanian. A lot of problems in Pennsylvania, huh?
Sir. Hi, John.
How you doing?
Good. Hey, John. I listen every week. You know, I email pretty frequently with some questions. I'm dealing right now with some tax issues. What we got here, at least in my subdivision, where I'm at, my county, my school district, is called a per capita tax. Okay, and what that is, it's a head tax. And I've been getting delinquent notices and stuff. And I have questions.
Hey, by the way, what are they trying to charge you on that cap tax?
Well, they have three different time periods. They have the early $9.80, then it's like $10 and change, and then with the statutory penalties as we speak, it's like $20.50.
And what's the purpose of that tax, do they say?
They said it's supposed to be allocated toward the school district, but we already have property taxes. We know one of the three is the school district
tax.
Yeah,
but that's unlawful also.
And I replied to them with a factual letter with questions, you know, one page. And I stated all the facts from, you know, statutory to constitutional. You know, Article 1, Section 1 of Pennsylvania states that we have indefeasible and inalienable rights, and that's property. My head's part of my body, which is property. That's the first form of property.
Yes.
And I said, slave, because per capita in Latin means for each head. That's what it literally means. And
yeah, but bear in mind, I don't know whether it's lawful to put a cap, cap tax on an individual, because in the Constitution, that's the only lawful tax that can be placed upon every individual. But you see, the key to that, though, is it can't be the person itself can't pay, is not to pay the tax. It's within the state that the state is to have the count of the individuals. Of course, you know, we have that through the federal government, so they already know how many people in the state. So I'm just going to use a very simple number. Let's say 1 million people in the state. So let's say they want to put a per cap tax on 1 million people. Let's say $10. So it's $10 million. And so the tax requirement is the state to pay that $10 million. Now the state has to find a lawful way to collect that tax. They can't go to the individual, okay, because that's unlawful. But what they can do is maybe raise sales tax. A quarter of a percent or something in order to
get
money. That's indirect, yes. So that's the way that they can collect the money to send to the federal government for that purpose. Now, because that's the structure and the way it works, well, the state can't put a tax on a head of an individual either. Because, again, they couldn't do it for the federal government. What makes them think they could do it for themselves? Now, you'd have to have something in their constitution that'll empower them. So you should go into the Constitution and see what you have on that. You know, as
well,
far as the direct tax.
I cited the U.S., which is Article 1, Section 9, Clause 14, no capitation or direct tax unless a portion among the census taken.
Right,
but you
had to find that in your, what does it say in your state constitution?
I'm not finding anything on direct taxes. At least I haven't seen anything yet, but I've been going, you know, sticking to Section 1, which is pertain.
Yeah, well, if you do a word search in that document, just put the word tax in, and maybe you'll find some stuff on it quickly. But if there's nothing there, then yeah, you can rely just particularly on the Constitution that a direct tax is unlawful. And again, I don't see how a state can go up against that position.
And even that.
But let me make a suggestion. What did you say? It's about $10.
Yeah, about $9.80 for early, okay. Which is like September.
Well, if I were you, what I would do to stay out of trouble is to give them the $10 under protest and then sue them. But you know, to not pay the $10 and just to sue them, you know, could put you into some jeopardy. I doubt it really, because it's only $10 anyway. So. You know.
I don't know how they can make anything just with the collections, because it's not even government collected. It's private third-party tax agency known as Keystone. But they handle all the personal taxes, from the income tax, which I have a problem with as well.
Becomes a due process problem, doesn't it? You can sue that. It's an independent agency?
Yeah, third-party private tax collection agency.
Okay, well, sue them. You know, for trying to come out after you without due process. What are they applying against you? They're trying to affect your credit? Are they doing anything to come out with a higher amount that you have to pay them? Are they trying to come and garnish you or something? I mean, what are they doing?
Well, I've asked for a summary, written summary with all the specifics and jurisdictions. And all they've been doing repeatedly with these continual requests is just sending a disclosure statement, which is general. It's not even addressed personally to me, and it just says there's a potential. The last page, or the second page, excuse me, is we may also impose interest and applicable penalties on the tax you owe and may seek criminal prosecution of you in appropriate circumstances. Also talking about levies, attachments, seizures, and sales of your property in appropriate circumstances. This is just per the letter.
And this is all for $10.
Yeah, I don't know how they can even afford an agent to collect and have any revenue at the end of the day.
Have they hit you with interest?
Yeah, the interest was like $5 statutory penalty with a 50 cents. So the total grand total delinquent fee now is $20.50. So $9.
Okay, how much of that is interest that they're claiming? 50%, $5?
Oh, easily, because initially, like I said, it's $9.80, and now it's
$20. Yeah, but the question, this is an important question. How much did they say in the interest is? If they're saying the interest is $5, then that's 50%, correct?
Yes.
That's called usury. That's a crime.
Yeah.
That's called usury.
Well, yeah. The thing is suspect, just on its face.
Okay, so you have a lot of, you could sue them.
Yeah, and they say in the event of litigation, you know, find the appeal to the common pleas.
And by making the claim that you can be liable to criminal charges, that's putting fear, and you put you into jeopardy. I mean, that's worth a lot of money.
You know, John, even to expound on that, seizures and sales of my property, I mean, everything is so disproportionate to the value or the amount of the tax. My property, I got more money in postage than what my judgment is. Just in writing these letters, asking for my, and they even claim that we have a taxpayer bill of rights. They talk about an irony, and it says, the local taxpayer bill of rights grants certain legal rights to taxpayers. Now, how can rights be granted if they're rights?
Because people believe that they are or can. That's why they
want them.
It doesn't make them lawful.
And even getting back to the school, I stated the fact that I'm not participating in the school system. I have no children. I'm single. I've been out of school for decades. We already pay school taxes and the property taxes. That's the largest of the three residential property taxes we currently pay. So they can't say that we don't contribute. And they said, for everybody 18 and older, regardless of property and income. But then again, there's exemptions for $10,000 a year or less. So
is
there
this
is
state law? Is this statewide?
Yeah, it's under it is, but here's the thing. I also presented to them evidence that not every county and subdivision is participating. I have three subdivisions.
And it's not uniform.
What's that?
And it's not uniform.
No, that's what I point out. Where is the census? Where's the uniformity? That's one of my first questions. And
yeah,
right there, that's the requirements of a direct tax.
Well, it's going to be an uphill battle, and you know, it's a battle worth fighting. And and again, you want to sue the people that are coming out after you. That's where the money's at, because you certainly deserve restitution. You've been threatened.
Yeah, and it wasn't even direct. It was just a general letter, because I think people were either too lazy or they were just relying on the click of a mouse to issue these letters just to throw us a bone, because there's nothing even stating my name, except the only thing is my name on the envelope with my account number. Now, that sounds all...
Right. Again, they're just giving you... they're just throwing stuff at you, like you say, giving you just paperwork. And you know, again, I had a battle a long time ago before I even understood anything much about the law. I understood construction law and made many arguments in construction law. But really, that's an administrative process is running, usually run by an architect or an engineer on the site who would make the judgment on that. But I've been a couple of times moved it into the court for an arbitration. But that said and done, I had a situation with the government on unemployment, and I made a big battle with them. And I didn't get anywhere with them. They even told me that the Constitution doesn't apply here. And at that point, I was outraged by that, but I really didn't understand anything that was going on, because it was before my knowledge of how the court system works. But I found out to some degree they're a paper tiger. I mean, I actually yelled at the judge. I got so angry. And they didn't do nothing to me. And when after I left, I realized, I said, wow, I can't believe they didn't do anything to me. And then they hit me with so many thousands of dollars, and I ignored them and didn't pay them, and nothing came of it. And I'm wondering, you know, when they go out after you for taxes, generally speaking, they sort of tag on to the federal government, let them do the fighting and stuff to get not only the federal monies but also the state monies. And that's the way I think they do it. Huh?
That's concurrent jurisdiction. They like to latch on, just like a speeding ticket from the city and the county. They like to get a portion of it. It's just a collection agency. That's what you made a good point. You brought up about the judge, you know, quoting the Constitution doesn't apply. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I've been looking into what, you know, equity. And now equity is all contract and legislative. And that's interesting, because that may bring a light on where stuff like that, it may not be under common law, but that's something that you might be able to, like, discharge debt or rescind. That might be sounds like a contract that you're in, where they look at it as a contract, and you could just basically close an account or discharge a debt.
Yeah, but that, you know, I'm not sure what you mean about those things, because some people who do that discharge, they're actually going to seek money and try to get money out of the SSQ accounts. You don't want to pursue anything like that if that's what you're doing. That's dangerous.
No, I'm not. No, I'm seeking dissolving. Basically like this, if I have an account number and they're wanting something from me, just to rescind it, close it, close the contract, or cancel it.
Well, again, I don't know how you would go about doing that, and I don't know whether that would be helpful. Again, you know, I make the point all the time in courts, but it falls on deaf ears, that there's a difference between law and equity, and it's well defined, and yet they don't understand it. And it's, you know, again, they don't want to understand it. The ones who do understand it don't want to understand it. The ones who don't understand it just rest on what they were taught, and that's that. And because once you start taking those building blocks that they use to construct the knowledge that these people have in courts, you know, the barristers, you start hitting those building blocks, it upsets their whole world, because it affects everything on them. Just one point, you know, just for them to have an understanding between those two things affects their whole world. Okay. But, you know, they've kind of patched that up in school, teaching them that, you know, common law is really collective, a collection of trial jury decisions. That's what they claim common law is. But anyway, it's a mess. The courts need to be totally cleansed, and we have to reset and bring, logic, common sense, common law back into the courts. And, you know, the fact of the matter is a judge doesn't get to sit in a court of law. Only magistrates will, or a sheriff could sit in, or a coroner can sit, or any magistrate can sit. And they can only act as a traffic cop, just keep things floating around. They can't make summary decisions. And that's why no judges are permitted in a court of law. When a judge sits in a court of law, all judges are magistrates, too. Okay? So, with that being said, they can sit in, but they can't make any judgment. It's there's a tribunal there for the judgment. It's called the jury. Everything has to be referred back to the jury for any kind of a judgment. Summary judgments are not to be made. The judgment is made at the end of the case, and that's it. You know, judges come in and they make all kinds of summary judgments. They even throw out evidence. They say, you can't bring that evidence. You can't bring this evidence in. Well, a court of law permits anybody to bring any evidence they want in. It's up to the jury to decide whether it has any weight to it or not. But anyway, it's a mess. We need to fix it. So, okay, anything final, Jeff?
Yeah, John, the income tax, the state income tax, now I'm well-versed on the federal. And I know, because I have the Internal Revenue Code, I have Dave Champion's books, and they're all factual, and I can match them up against other three authors, and they all arrive at the same facts. I know for a fact that the people in the 50 states in the private sector are not liable for the income tax. Now, that being said, most of the states piggyback off the federal law.
Okay, that's exactly what they do. I don't think they'll chase you personally because they can't really build a good enough case, in my opinion.
Yeah, now Keystone here, that private tax collection agency, handles the collection of the personal earned income tax. And they redefined income, not them, but they cited the state. They had an amendment in 2002 called Act 166. Now, they redefined income. Now, I know they can redefine income, but they can't tax things that weren't first taxable before, just by the change of the definition.
By the way, income has to do with income coming into a corporation, not a and that's why they did the caps on your name, okay?
Yes.
Making you ultimately making you a corporation. And an argument could be made: well, if I'm a corporation, then anything I eat is part of the I got to keep that corporation alive. You know, that corporation has to be housed. You know, everything you do, you can write off then. You know, so even the argument that they make, they actually don't make the argument out loud. You know, it's silent. You know, it makes the judges feel more comfortable, like they can get away with it. You know,
like you said, nobody wants to read. Well, I chose to read, and I followed it. This wasn't a real direct path. Now, it started with Act 32. Act 32 was as of 2008, the last session. So that came after 2002. Okay, I follow that. I go straight to the definitions. Okay, and now earned income is defined. Okay, and it's under such and such, but then it leads to, it's called Title 61. If you go to Title 61 under Pennsylvania, it refers to Chapter 24 of the Internal Revenue Code, which is federal. Okay, and then it's from there it takes you to Section 3401 to 3406, which only applies to three classes of persons, and it's not 50 state citizens. Okay, so if the state is kind of piggyback off of that, then I hear people saying that no, Pennsylvania is not based on federal law. Well, that's everything I'm finding is based on the federal Title 26, which is the Internal Revenue Code, and from my understanding, was never entered into the Federal Register like Title 31, which is money and finance. So, just like ATF and all that stuff too. So, I don't know if I can rest assured that they're not going to have any more power than the federal IRS in Pennsylvania on the personal income tax, because they won't even say wages, salaries, and even exchange of property. Now, what if it's a barter? How can they even put a value on that? And again, that's a violation of, you know, of your rights constitutionally protected property. What if we just want to exchange an item for an item or a deed for a deed? There's no monetary value. How do they even justify it in auditing or even trying to collect on that?
Well, I'm sure they'll find a way.
I'm sure they'll try to find a way, but yeah, but that's...
Well, again, it's all unlawful. Any tax against you is directly is a direct tax, and direct taxes are unlawful. And again, you can rest on the Constitution on that on itself, and the Supreme Court where it had ruled that direct tax is unlawful, and you know, and the meaning of the 16th Amendment really. Put it right back where it belonged and directed itself right towards the corporations. There was no need to even write the 16th Amendment, is the point.
Which is a correction of a case. Yeah, it was actually, it's been ruled that a income tax is an indirect excise. So you
and
must
not
be
only that, the 16th Amendment also was never ratified. So
that's what I heard.
The 17th Amendment was never ratified either.
Yeah, I only heard four or five states properly amended it. Yeah, that's another rabbit hole there. Well, John, yeah, I appreciate it. Now, hey, I wanted to ask, do you have any contact info I could send you any information, like if you ever wanted to do an interview with a couple gentlemen and or come to one of our Zoom meetings? We have a, we're in a, you know, Committee of Safety, and we meet every Wednesday statewide with all the committees across the state. I've invited Jim before. I told him to extend the invitation to you, but I didn't have an email for you.
Yeah, well, I can, you know, I'll come speak to anyone in the group, but I'll probably do it through Skype or something, or you know, some kind of a online program, you know.
We do Zoom, audio, video, if
yeah,
you want.
Zoom. Yeah, I do Zoom too. Yeah, I mean, I don't normally do Zoom, but I can because I have an account for that, so I can do a Zoom call.
It's hosted by two women out in Lancaster, but yeah, we have every county. Well, we don't have all 67, but we have any county that's welcome. Anybody's welcome. But we've actually recorded our county in the county. We had to use an outside county, but it is recorded. It's legitimate. We have our seal, so we're actually settled. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So
well,
we
yeah. If you want, just send a message to mail mail at nationallibertyalliance.org. And put in the subject matter, you know, just, you know, put my name in there. And I should pick it up, you know,
yeah,
on the subject.
That's a Wednesday night meeting, John.
What's that?
Yeah,
it's a conflict with your Wednesday night meeting.
Oh, okay, yeah. What time is your meeting? From what time to what time? What is it?
7:30 to 9.
Okay, well, I do a Bible study between 7:30 and 8:30, so it would be a problem. I don't know if you can get a special day, maybe do a Saturday, do a couple hours or whatever, or do something a little late.
I could talk to the PA Pioneers, and they can all, they always meet. They meet almost weekly. We have our local county meeting every Monday from, I don't know, 8:30 till about 9. Half hour, 45 minutes, but just and Rosalind knows you. She's our chairwoman, she was our moderator, so she's familiar with you, and you were actually
did that on Mondays, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That conflicts again. What time, though? I mean, I could do something earlier on Monday, I think. I guess I could. I really wouldn't like to, because I like to get that rest, because you know, I beat the clock all day long. I tried so hard to get done early, and, you know, it's the next thing you know, I try to get a little break between that and a Monday night program. And same thing on Wednesdays, you know, I got my program. And then I got a committee of safety going here in my county. I'm waiting to hear for the next meeting. We're just trying to organize. So. But if we could work something out with time-wise, you know, maybe just have a special meeting one day, do a on a different day.
Yeah, how about this? I can make mention of, like, your schedule, what you prefer, and just get that email to somebody up in the host leadership for the Zoom for that statewide thing, and they can make a personal arrangement maybe sometime, and they can still probably...
Yeah, I could do Tuesday, I could do Thursday, and I could do Saturday. Those are kind
good.
Of the 3 days that are tied up. I don't like to do much on the Lord's Day, and... And Fridays, you know, I try to spend time with the wife and family, you know, so I try to break away early. And, but anyway, you know, my life is full, but we can find the time as long as we can, you know, accommodate some different thing other than Wednesday.
Well, you know what, the reason I'm bringing this up too is because your name and your book was brought up, and I said, yeah, I try to get some invites out there, but the fact is that you're known. Your book's known, National Liberty Alliance is known. I shared a website, and they've actually shared the screen with your homepage. So that's why I want to try to, you know, hook up. And, yeah, I'll make mention, but that's mail@nationalliberalliance.org, correct?
Yeah, with that goes to all of the leadership. And, you know, I don't really, a lot, I just don't read a lot of that. I just don't have time. But I skim through it, and I might look at the subject. And if I see my name come up on the subject, I'll open up the mail.
That's what I'll do. I'll drop that in the chat our next meeting, Wednesday. And they can decide when, based on your schedule, which I'll provide, you know, the days you told me. And then they can make the arrangements personally to maybe have us all.
All right, that sounds good. Okay, thank you. We'll take our next caller. Appreciate it. And by the way, we only have two people left in the queue. Anybody wants to get into the queue, *6 and 1 if you're on a phone, and Apple browser should have a button there somewhere. Next call. Ross, how you doing?
John, I haven't even gone through court or anything like that. So, in our state, general jurisdiction is left to the circuit court and the county court. In Oregon.
Okay, I didn't get that. Something about Oregon? Say that again.
General jurisdiction is left to the circuit court of the county and the county court.
Okay, the circuit court, the county, and the what? What's the third one?
The county court.
Okay, and those are courts of record? Is that what you're saying?
They call it general jurisdiction.
General jurisdiction. I wonder what that means, general. Do they find general jurisdiction?
It's the primary referring to this prior court record. I don't know what it's referring to. Anyways.
Yeah, that's. I've never heard of anything called a general jurisdiction. I don't know what that would even mean. You know, general jurisdiction, in my opinion, is no jurisdiction at all. You know, it has to apply to something in equity or something in law. And if it's in equity, then it has to be applied to some kind of a code and legislation, statutes or whatever, you know, they got going there. And it would have to be defined under some title. So who knows? I have no clue. You know, anyway, yeah, I don't even know what they're talking about, general jurisdiction. Start over. You just broke up. Try that again. Ross, I missed that. You broke up. Start all over. Say it again.
It's general jurisdiction means general power of the government.
General power, P-O-W-E-R?
Yes.
General power of the government. And do they define that power? So none of this has any basis in law, what they're saying here. General jurisdiction being defined by the power of the government, but what is the power? And again, it's got to go back to some title. If there's no title, it has to be under a title or just under law in general, period. And law...
It's under our... In our Constitution, it says it in the Constitution of Oregon, it's a general jurisdiction. The Circuit Court of Oregon and the county of Missouri.
Yeah, I don't understand any of that, Ross. I don't even know what they're talking about.
It's just...
And again, a lot of the later... states that came in, and they got a lot of them have problems in their constitutions and And remember, there is a in the U.S. Constitution, you know, anything that isn't contrary to the federal law is null and void, ultimately. I mean, that's what ultimately it says in the Constitution, you know. So let's see. Let me see. I believe that's Article 3. I think it's Section 2 here. Okay, that talks about... hang on a second. Article 6, this Constitution, the laws of the United States, which is, by the way, Article 2, Clause, Article 6, Clause 2. This Constitution, the laws of the United States, which shall be made pursuant thereof, and all treaties made, or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary, notwithstanding. So anything that's repugnant to the federal constitution is null and void. And the best ruler to judge something lawful or not is the Bill of Rights. I mean, but also, of course, the whole constitution. But if anything's not clear, if it violates a right, then it's not a law.
John Josh, jurisdiction is the authority of the court to hear any type of cases, including civil, criminal, and family cases. Courts,
all right, well, that's not the jurisdiction. Well, I guess it is the jurisdiction. The point is they can hear any case. That's what they're stating. And yeah, they're listing out what that might be. I mean, we have the same thing in here with New York State, where they, you know, the state courts have the authority to hear just about anything. Now, there's one exception to that, which is, if you're suing the state, then it has to be done in a federal court. I think that's the only exception here in New York.
Oh, yeah, and the jurisdiction of often state trial courts or superior courts. I mean, superior courts...
But that is not defining or stating anything clear on what the jurisdiction is, in the sense that the true jurisdiction identifies with not only... And that would be more like subject matter jurisdiction, I guess you might say. But personam jurisdiction is the key. Anything that is legislative doesn't have jurisdiction over the people. Only that which is lawful, which is under the law, which is common law, has power and authority over the people. So there's really only two jurisdictions, statutory or equity, it's called, or law. And that's true with every state and every state constitution, ultimately. And if it's not, anything to the contrary is null and void anyway.
Oh yeah, that's Article 6. I think superior court is more like what common law court is. The common law is superior over Ogden law. That means legislative law is Ogden law.
Over what?
Ogden law.
Yeah, I'm not getting that. Over what law? Any law?
No, ordinary law. Ordinary means legislative law.
Say that again. I'm not getting it still. I'm sorry.
Ordinary.
Oh, ordinary. Is that what you're saying? Ordinary?
Yes.
So say the whole statement out, not over ordinary, that has to do with ordinary law. And again, I'm not sure what ordinary law would be. You have to find a definition.
Legislative law. That's what legislative law is. Ordained body of the legislative body is the ordained body that makes legislative law.
Okay, the legislative law.
Yes. It's the law, because it's man's law, not God's law.
Right, man's law versus God's law, exactly.
Yes.
And that's the point. And that's a direct violation of the foundation of who we are as a people. The Declaration of Independence put us right under the laws of God.
He's God's law is the superior law.
Yeah, but remember, you know, look at these people don't even know anything about the Declaration of Independence, it seems. I mean, anybody who goes to law school, if they've been taught anything about the Constitution in school prior to that, you know, in lower schools, you know, for 1 through 12, so to speak, and they go into college to study law, and if they've learned anything truly about the Constitution, there'd be a conflict within their mind trying to put this together with what they're teaching. So obviously they don't know the Declaration of Independence. They don't know the Constitution. They don't know the Bill of Rights. They know certain rights, I'm sure, that's mentioned, but generally speaking, they don't know the Bill of Rights. I mean, right there Amendment 7, it says right here very clearly, in suits of common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of a trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried in a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Right there in Amendment 7. How can they not get it? I mean, if I had this knowledge and I went to college and to study law, and they start teaching the things they're teaching, that'd be contrary to what I know. I mean, how can you even go through the school? I mean, again, therefore they don't know anything about this stuff, and they're not taught that. My brother went to law school, and he said that they don't teach the Constitution at all in law schools. They refer back to statutes, and I know. There's a guy that does a course on law, which I had learned how the court system works through him, at least part of what I understand from him. And he spoke about that they teach in school, you know, that we have statutes for all that stuff. You don't need the Constitution. Don't bring that up in the courts. They want you to bring the statutes up. You see how they get you further and further away from, you know, we the people, what we established, what we ordained, and what we established. So... Again.
A yield.
I'm sorry, did you say a yield?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I appreciate the call, Ross.
Okay.
Okay, we'll take our next caller, who right now is the last caller. If anybody else wants to get into the queue, *6 and 1 if you're on a phone, and there should be a button if you're on an app or browser. Okay, we got, is that Linda from Virginia?
Linda in Virginia.
I got it right. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
I'm just calling back to talk about this AI again.
Uh-oh. That's going to destroy the world and a lot quicker than people realize it.
Well, you know, the thinking is to get ahead of it, but I think we're already behind it because...
It's too late. Look at it. The greed of man. Go ahead.
My suspicion is that the Biden administration had already installed AI and replaced many agency systems without disclosure to the American public. And, you know, you have no signature on documents, you just get a form letter, you know, from whoever, you know, whatever government agency. It's not signed. And then, so there's complete deception to the public. They think they are dealing with a person and an organization when really they're communicating with a machine.
Yeah, it's called robo-signing. It's been going on for a very, very long time. And it's just forms when they see keywords or key things coming in, pop, and they have a form this, form that, form, and it's a process of forms, and the whole thing is really building a case, because a lot of people, you know, unfortunately, they get frightened or they get frustrated, they don't know how to respond to it, and they lay it aside and they ignore it, and then the next thing you know, they get another one and another one and another one, and what they're doing is building a case that you just... you know, agreeing with them ultimately, because
that's
of
ridiculous. It's like everything they do counts and nothing you do counts.
Yeah, but that's,
you know,
been going on long before Biden. That's been going on for decades ultimately.
Well, yes, I know, but I think it was in full scale implementation with the Biden administration, because, you know, I had my issues, and then I was reading other people's posts and all this, but then we started reading about the empty buildings in Washington, and that allegedly, the people were working at home. And I started thinking, are there really people working at home, or is it just machines that are just running everything, you know?
Well, I don't even think it's even that. It's just a lot of ways to get money out of the system, and there's nothing going on, my opinion. Anyway, that's what it seems, what we're really finding out a lot of this stuff. I know they're in the process of working out, tracing out where this money is going. And I can't understand that it's untraceable. There's got to be a trace somewhere. I mean, it's got to go to a bank, and it's got to be cashed, you know?
Yeah, I think it was this facade that we were paying all these people to do the work, when in reality, I hope they find out. But anyway, if you had any issue or conflict or controversy, which was outside of the basic design, you know, of the system, that was treated with complete disregard, and you can't get an answer. It's like you can't get to someone who, like a human that would use decision making, you know, and the stuff I was getting back didn't make any sense at all. They were addressing things that weren't even issues, and, you know, they were not addressing the issues that I presented. It was like whoever was reviewing it could not understand what the issues were. And I think the complaints were increasing. They were really building. And that, they realized it was a failure, and that they were not going to be able to pull this off. So, and they were on the brink of being exposed.
Well, again, you know, look at when you don't respond, you acquiesce, and that's the case they build upon you. You acquiesce.
But it's unfair to be pitting us. First of all, the deception is unfair that you don't even know you're not dealing with a real person, a real human. And then the second one is it's unfair for them to be, you know, lobbing this barrage of machine issued, you know, whatever, you know, at you, and then you have to keep up with it. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's how they get the money. Look at all the money we've been paying into the IRS and a lot of the money that's going out through and being paid out through USAID, USAID.
Yep.
All that is really our money. Coming in through corporations, through people and everything, in order to pay for our demise, for our destruction. Because that's what they use to pay all these illegals to come in, to live in these, hotels and give them, I don't know, how many thousand dollars a month.
I think all that was distraction from what they were doing, trying to put this global system in place with this AI. And that they, you know, the whole thing is they're surreptitiously putting it in place and not disclosing it to the American public. And
they don't disclose anything.
We need to get the message out that any AI that affects government or public interaction, you know, must be disclosed to the public for review, comment, and evaluation. And
AI is a problem everywhere. I mean, corporations are using it.
No, but they're addressing it like it's going to be a problem. It's going to be a problem.
No,
it's
it
not
is
going.
Of course, but it's going to get worse. Look at it, it's going to render man obsolete. Literally going to render man obsolete. You're not going to have
exactly.
access. Exactly. We don't
how
need
many,
access no more because
how many jobs or
AI
how many
can,
people are out of jobs? You know.
Well, that's the point. Look, let's take what's going on in Hollywood. Again, you don't need actors no more. You don't need the producers. You don't need anything. You just need AI to tell it what to do, and it creates all this stuff, visual stuff, and it looks just like it's real. Okay? And it's gotten to that point. where it's hard to tell the difference between what is real and what isn't real. That's one problem. I mean, everything that you can do, it can be replaced by a robot. I mean,
you know, it's the question.
But our children are not learning things that they need to learn because they'll have AI at their fingertips. And this whole thing is just to make you stupid, to keep us dumb. But it's going to destroy all of mankind. I look at this stuff and think about it, and it's going to destroy mankind totally. You know, there was a question asked to AI about morality. It was a moral question, okay? And the question is if an individual was stole from one place and then gave it to the poor, and I forget what place and I forget what poor, but that was really the design of the question, is that okay? And AI responds, it's perfectly okay. Even though there was a wrong thing, it was done for a good purpose. That's the morality thinking of an AI, okay? You know, working its...
But my point is, the people are not being, you know, made aware of what they're doing, and so there's no opportunity for them to weigh in, you know, or have a voice in it.
But my point is the government is doing that at every level on everything. Look at the courts.
That's true.
They're not being made aware of what's going on. Look at the tax system, and not only in the tax that you're talking about, but also in property tax. Look at the problems in all of the court systems on every level.
Yeah, lack of transparency.
Lack of transparency. Yeah, it's all fraud, and you lose every time, and that's that. You can't win. So.
And I just read yesterday that everything Biden signed was done by AutoPen.
Yeah, I heard that. That just came out.
Which they're now questioning whether any of it is. See, there's a big battle that needs to happen on, you know, the legitimacy of all these unsigned documents.
It's happening.
And all this AutoPen stuff. There's no accountability with it. None. Zero.
It's happening.
And then we're paying these, you know, public officials obscene amounts of salary to do a job, and they're not accountable. This is ridiculous. This is so absurd.
Yeah, but the case is being made. They are going to be held accountable. I would never have said this, you know, years ago, but there's no doubt in my mind right now. They all will be held accountable. Remember, everything that's going on, it takes time in order to file charges because you have to go through the lawful process.
Right.
Go through the indictments.
They take full advantage of that, though.
That's okay. I'm hearing, I find it hard to believe that someone said recently, I got to look into this, but it did come from a reasonably good source, that there is a million. There are millions. That's a lot of indictments. A million indictments out there. Now they've been working on this for a long time, but to get to a million indictments, I find it hard to believe. But there are many, many thousands, hundreds of thousands. I'm hearing it that has been reasonably.
But you know, I feel like that just ends up being a money grab by one party or the other. You know.
No, I don't know what you're talking about there. What do you mean?
Well, there's indictments and they get, you know, they get charged or whatever, and then they get fined.
We're talking about the white hats at this point. We're talking particularly about Trump, who set forth things in motion in 2017 when he came into power, and he set forth things going on. You know, there's numerous individuals out there that have been working on indictments and still working on indictments. I'll tell you what, Durham, I think, is still working on indictments. Sessions, I believe, is still working on things. Barr, I'm not too sure about, but maybe him too. But remember, it's not just three people or two people. Each one of these people have a whole army of lawyers working with them in order to do these things. So I'm hearing there's a lot of indictments over a long period of time. We're looking at about 8 years at this point of time. But now we have a lot of things that are being uncovered. And And now a lot more indictments have to be dealt with on every level, not only the federal level, the state levels, going all the way down into towns, literally, in villages. With all of this fraud going on and money laundering and all kinds of things, I mean, it's just huge.
It is beyond
what
anybody thought.
Well, not beyond what I thought. I've come to realize this a while ago. A lot of people have come to realize this a little while back. But yeah.
No, but aren't you amazed by that? Aren't you amazed what they're coming up with? It's just unbelievable.
Well, it's not a surprise to me. It just isn't a surprise. It was in the beginning, of course, okay? But it's so long ago now that I've been, it's just not a surprise to me. And we're not hearing the real big stuff, the serious stuff. We're not even hearing about that yet at all, okay? But it's all subversion.
Against the United States of America
to destroy the government that we have, and it's a big case. It's a lot of time to put these indictments together to get everything, and then finally start to applying it. But the way that they're revealing it and laying it out to the people, it's just little pieces at a time, because you got to educate the people, you got to let the people see it, and the real big stuff, I think, is going to come out in a couple of months, less than a couple of months, when the faucet is going to be open, and we're going to find out all of the real serious trafficking that's been going on right out of our government itself.
But everybody's like, well, will anything happen? Will anything change?
Well, yes.
That's the thought process that most everybody has, is nothing ever happens to these. Nothing ever happens to these.
Well, I understand that. People are impatient, though. They don't understand. Look, if people are really paying attention now and really looking at the different sources for their information, And are really trying to figure things out, they will see it's happening. It's happening right before us, right as we talk. And we realize, the wheels of justice move very slowly, because, there's a lot of work to put together just one case. We're talking hundreds of thousands of cases that need to be put together. And I think a part of the solution to that is the military, because it's subversion on the highest level. These people have subverted the United States of America. There's a lot of
I have to thank National Liberty Alliance, because I have been relentlessly posting about retribution, restoration, and restitution.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm hearing a lot about that. And this is the thing. They've already gotten away with what they did, no matter what happens going forward, unless it's clawed back, unless there is retribution, restoration, and restitution.
But they will all answer to the final judge of the universe. So nobody gets away with anything, really.
Yeah, I know that, but, for the here and now,
the Bible talks about man saying peace and safety at last. That day is coming. It's drawing near quite quickly.
Let me ask you about something else if we have time.
Yep, go ahead. Yeah, a couple of minutes.
What do you think about one person, one vote?
Well, of course that makes sense, but it's got to be one person who's a citizen of the United States.
Right. I can understand why we didn't have that in the beginning, why we had to have parties and all this, and I'm like you, I'm not for parties at all, but...
We're brought in by the banksters and the lawyers,
Right, we didn't have technology, but now we do,
mm-hmm.
now we do. And we have the opportunity to have one person, one vote. And I'm trying to get.
You don't need technology for that. All you need is a ballot on a piece of paper.
Right. Yeah. Right. But I'm trying to find out.
I'm going to tell you where the problem is. The problem is on the county level. What happens is They have created a system that all votes are brought in. You know, all of the information from all these machines are brought together ultimately and fed into the county. And then the ones that have to be looked at because of the mail-ins, which they pushed very heavily, it all comes to the counties, okay? So you have one place in the county that sits down and does the votes, more so in different areas than others, okay? Some areas may not do it that way, but basically that's how it's done in quite a few counties. The way it's supposed to be done ultimately is the count is to be taken right there in the election district itself, which easily every election district doing the counting of the vote, allowing the people to come in and watch the counting of the vote with paper ballots and the recording of that votes can be done very quickly within a couple of hours in every election district, because there's enough manpower in every election district to bring forth these numbers. Then those numbers can be funneled up and then, you know, put onto a spreadsheet type thing, and they have to be certified. So you got the certification of a number that sits on a spreadsheet that then you can calculate through a spreadsheet, and you get the numbers laid out exactly what the votes were for everybody. And it's very simple. That's why it can be done. Paper ballots can be done and counted and be done before the day is over, you know, before the night is over.
Yeah, so, that's what I say. I heard it mentioned, you know, before the election, which was not a good time. It's never a good time right before an election to change to something like that. But now I can just imagine if we had one person, one vote, they would have to cater to the people, you know?
If we had committees of safety in every county, they'd have to cater to the people even more so.
Yeah, and the people would have a voice, and we'd just be done with all this being treated with disregard, you know. It's ridiculous. We have to keep struggling to have a voice in the whole process.
And one other thing, the Committees of Safety being the true committee man, okay, what our founding fathers exercised in their days, okay, the Committees of Safety being the true committee man would be the ones who would certify the counting of the votes within their election districts.
And you're saying, okay, my question is, why do we need any committee? But it was what you just explained.
The only way you can have government by consent is through committees of safety. I don't know of any other way. You can call it another name, but everybody's got to do the same thing. The committees of safety are the ones that make the decisions on who gets onto the ballots. Right now, it's a statutory process by a statutory committee man. Okay, and ultimately it's the party boss who actually makes the decision who's getting onto the ballot.
Well, why can't that be one person, one vote?
What's that?
For who even gets on the ballot.
That's the point, is you see, someone has got, you got to get signatures. Do you know how a process works? You have to get signatures to get people onto the ballot. Depending on what office they're running for, they have to get so many signatures.
Yeah, but... Okay. I'm thinking if we have one person, one vote, the whole process would change. You know, I don't know. I don't know all that. All I know is that would, what I'm asking, the reason I'm asking now is I'm looking for reasons not to do it. And you know what? I'm not finding any at all.
Right. Well, look, we're going to have to, we only got a few minutes and we do have one other person in the queue. So we could pick up to talk about this some more next week if you want. I
definitely intend to, you know, if I don't hear any reason why not to pursue it, I think we should be, you know, full speed ahead with this.
Well, I have a lot to say about this, and it sounds like you do too. So let's talk again,
okay. But
next week, whenever you want, and try to get in a little early so we can spend time. But I do want to take this next caller before we end the program tonight.
Okay. All right. Thanks
okay.
so much.
Thank
All
you.
Right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Our last caller is Brett. You got the mic. Go right ahead. What state you're from, Brett?
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Yourself?
Good. Thank you.
Yep. I have a court date scheduled next week. I know I mentioned it either last week or the week before we were on. It was small claims. I submitted an affidavit, and they're still moving forward with the hearing. Now the hearing is on is virtual and Zoom. So this is the first time that I'm dealing with a court on virtually. So would you have any tips on how to just handle that?
Well, I forget, you know, I recall talking with you before, but I forget, what's the case about? It's a small claims, right?
Yeah, small claims. And I was served at my door, and I was reading through it, and some attorney, it looked like they wrote an affidavit. I mean, it was like 10 or 11.
So you've been sued by someone, or this is a government pursuing you, or a government agency or something? What is it?
It's credit, American Express.
Okay.
So
they're suing you. Well, look at you want them to ultimately give you proof. Okay, they're going to give proof. I know Gerard won a case on this, but Gerard's not here tonight, so he could talk a lot better concerning that kind of a case than I can. They really don't have much of a record to begin with. And all these signatures, for instance, especially today when you go to a store and you buy something and you put an electronic signature on it or whatever, ultimately, in fact, not in theory, it doesn't stand up in court, an electronic signature. It's got to be a wedding signature. So that in itself is an argument, but you have to have someone to argue the case on the other side, and it is a lawyer that's arguing the case on the other side. I'm sure if you really carefully went through their case, you could probably find a lot of flaws in it that you could probably pick apart and really, you know, pick that affidavit apart quite a bit. And that's what you got to do. You know, you got to pick that affidavit apart.
Well, I responded to those, and I had some requests, and there was no response other than coming from the court.
Mm-hmm.
Because I responded to the lawyer, and I had to file a response, which I did that, but the only response that I got is, okay, we're having a court date on such and such date. And
well,
I'm like, wow.
What's the interest on that? You said American Express?
Yes. I don't have
the
information.
What was the interest?
I can't recall.
Okay, but I'm sure it's usury.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's what I'd make my case about.
I'm sorry. Usury?
That's right. And it depends on what court you're in, too. You know,
it's a circuit.
Okay, so it's state court. It's a state court. See, I don't understand how those courts work. I know how the court in New York State works, and I know how the federal courts work. But each state, they have these different things. It's a court in a county that's a state court, correct? Or the circuit court could be a group of many counties, I guess.
Wow.
I don't know. What state are you in again?
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. Yeah, I don't know how it's set up in there. You know, you can go onto the internet and just ask what the structure of the state of Wisconsin is for the court, you know, the court system, and you can see the structure. And then you can know it's a state court or what kind of court, you know. It sounds like it's a state court, being a circuit court.
Okay. So
there's two things. If you're in a state court, well, it's not really, it doesn't have anything to do with statute, so I don't see any kind of a problem with that. But I'll tell you what, to go back to make an argument against these individuals would be really on the usury side of things. And again, usury is against the law.
Okay, so can a lawyer just not respond, or can anyone not respond to an affidavit?
No, they have to... Look, if they didn't respond to your affidavit, then you file a paper of default to the affidavit from the extent of the facts. In other words, if you laid out a fact and a fact and a fact, and they didn't rebut those facts, then therefore after a certain amount of days, 30 days usually, or 20 days, depending, but if they don't respond to those facts, then they agree to them, okay? And then you can take your affidavit and write a paper laying it out that they had agreed to this, they acquiesced, okay, and therefore they agreed to this, they agreed to that, they agreed to this, they agreed to that, they agreed to that. Therefore, you know, you look for a summary judgment on your behalf if that's what you built your affidavit around in order to, you know, get to.
Okay. Now, is there a certain, do I have to do that certain amount of times before
well,
the
default? Well, how long ago did you send your, give them the affidavit?
This was the 3rd of February.
Okay, so the 3rd of February, you go into the 3rd of March, it's a month, so February, you know, you're over the 30-day period, and again, let me think about this. See, you know, look at when you file papers, you know, in the court, you need to give them a certain amount of time to respond, and 30 days is appropriate. And now, where are they at? They're just moving forward. Again, there's so much that's involved here. I'm not sure how I can even really say too much about what really to do, because I don't know where your case is at. I don't know where they're pushing, if they're pushing for summary judgment. I don't know what motions are being made. But again, I would try to get a paper in the court that they acquiesced because they didn't respond. But, you know, did you give them enough time? Did you put anything in the paper that, for response and in you replying affidavit to their paper that they originally, you know, filed? When did the case start? How many months ago?
I was served, it was like January 15th, and they said, you have to appear or file by the 3rd. So I only had like a week and a half or so, and of course, among other things.
I don't understand that. They filed on January 3rd, okay? So you're saying on January 7th or 9th, they're saying you had till then to respond?
January 15th, and it was on, they pointed out.
Well, the law is ultimately when you they got 30 days, okay, to respond, and that's what your paper should be saying on the summons, that they've got 30 days, but it could be 20 days if they served directly. So usually if you use a sheriff, if the sheriff finds the individual and serves them directly or some kind of a server, you know, there's private servers you can get also. Sheriff is the best way to go, though. And they find the person because they're going to serve them directly. And so they got 20 days to respond. So you should have been given at least 20 or as much as 30 days to respond. Now, did you respond in that time period or no?
No, I didn't.
Okay. So they're pushing forward as a default, I presume, at this point. Are they moving for a default?
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. When you said, did I respond, like did I respond? The initial response, or did I respond?
Well, when they filed the paper, did you rebut it within 20 or 30 days? Did they serve?
Oh yeah, because it was only I only had like a week and a half.
Did they serve you directly? Did you personally get served, or
did
they serve it to someone else in the household?
No, to me.
Okay, so that brings you under 20 days, but it has to be said so in your summons, okay, and. Usually it's 30 days, but if it's personal, then it's 20. But the bottom line is, you know, when you get that paper, you have to rebut every single thing in that paper. And anything you don't rebut, they're going to hold that you acquiesced.
Okay. And I did that. I mean, I I rebutted everything except for the
and you
part
did that rebuttal in affidavit form.
Yes.
Okay. Now, did you do an affidavit? Did you write a paper making the claims of facts and demanding for an answer, starting to go through what's called discovery?
I did. At least I believe I did. It was an affidavit. I spelled out all the facts of what happened.
But do you understand how discovery works and what discovery is, that you're asking for certain information, requiring them to respond to certain statements that they have to answer? Did you do that? That's where you build your case, because that's where you can find a default, because when they don't answer something, then they've acquiesced to it. Just like the opposite goes to you. If you don't answer, then you acquiesced. But with that, we're over time, so we'll have to pick up some more at another time if you want to talk more. But again, it's a difficult case for me to really comment too much on, because I really don't know enough of the facts, you know, to comment on the details. But just procedural, I can help you with. And pretty much what I told you is the procedural part of that. But these are simple cases. They should be able to go very, very simply and quick. Anyway.
Okay. It was virtual, and that's kind of new to me as well. But
yeah, I don't like virtual. I've been in virtual on a couple occasions. I thought it would be advantageous, and it is not. Not from my perspective, anyway.
Right.
So. But for some people who can't articulate themselves well, maybe they walk all over you anyway. You know, no matter whether you're in the court or not, they walk all over you. So, all right, we got to come to an end. Appreciate the call, though.
All right, thank you.
All right. Okay, good night, everybody. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Good night.